Return to Camp Blood, episode 52. Mr. Voorhees, you have the con. This episode is brought to you by FridayThe13Franchise.com.
Jesus Christ. Jason's alive. He killed my friend, now he's coming for me.
He's got a death curse.
Jason's a legend.
I'm Mrs. Voorhees, an old friend of the Christies.
Jason belongs in hell.
You're doomed if you stay here.
Never come back again.
You see, Jason was my son, and today is his birthday.
Welcome to another episode of Return to Camp Blood. I'm your host, Chris, joined by my fellow counselors, Eric.
What's up, y'all? And we miss you, E.
Nathan.
What's up, guys?
And Bobby Hill.
How's it going?
That just sounded really creepy, Bobbo.
Yeah, it did. Beam me up, Scotty.
But we have a problem with the last guy we beamed on board. Oh, wait. He just wants his machete back. Whew.
Star Trek or even Star Wars, it ain't. But Jason X is the kind of flick where you just want to sit down, grab the sixer of your choice, and enjoy a ride of such fucking absurdity. You have no choice but to dig it. Well, Nathan might not think so. You have the dude who got kicked down a well in 300, alien references up the ass, a bot you would do, nipples or not, and of course, Mr. Hodder's final turn as everyone's favorite mama's boy. But, you know, before we dig into the 10th installment of the Friday the 13th franchise, I sort of wanted to touch on some recent comments made by Mr. John Carpenter on the Bret Easton Ellis podcast, where he made some pretty disparaging remarks about our favorite franchise. So back on the 23rd, I guess, John Carpenter appeared on this podcast and just fucking slayed our franchise. I'm going to sort of read his comments and we're going to comment on it. Carpenter says one springs from an organic idea, and he's talking about the Texas Chainsaw Massacre here, and has a truly artist's eye working. And Friday the 13th, I feel, affects me as very cynical. It's very cynical movie making. It just doesn't rise above its cheapness. I think the reason that all these slasher movies came in the 80s was a lot of folks said, look at the Halloween movie. It was made for peanuts, and look at the money it's made. We can make money like that. That's what teenagers want to see. So they just started making them, cranking them out. Most of them were awful. So, like, I mean, we all know that Victor Miller did, in fact, rip off Halloween for the first installment in the franchise. But, like, while that's true, and Victor Miller even said as such, I think that Carpenter here doesn't give the franchise a fair shake. I mean, because, yeah, like, if you go back and watch part one, it's a completely different movie than the first Halloween.
You can't even compare the two. Halloween was a German expressionistic film, period. Now, although Victor Miller may have got the premise for Friday the 13th from Halloween, Friday the 13th is not a German expressionistic film, period. So it's apples and oranges, and for it to be an organic idea, it would have to be original. And sir, that is not an original idea.
But can't we say that we enjoy, that's the reason why we enjoy, I agree with the fact that yes, the movies are cheesy, and I think some of us can all agree on that, but isn't that the reason why we sit down and watch these movies and enjoy?
Honestly though, I don't think they start getting cheesy until part six.
I agree.
In my opinion.
And Halloween started getting cheesy at 5.
Well, there was fucking part 3. I mean.
Oh, Season of the Witch? Yeah.
Well, yeah. But hang on, though. With that, you can't watch that as a Michael Myers film. You have to sit down and say, I'm going to watch this objectively and not relate it to a Michael Myers film.
But that's like saying you can't watch Friday 5 as a Jason Voorhees movie, as a Friday the 13th movie. I mean, it's
a little bit different circumstances, though.
Not really, because it's not, just like in part 5, it's not Jason, and in Halloween 3, it's not Michael. So,
well,
what's the difference?
Do with Michael Myers at all compared to
he does make an appearance.
Well, but I mean, if you just look at it objectively, it's not essentially a Michael Myers film. Whereas in part five, you do have the imposter Roy, who is obviously, you know, wearing a hockey mask, wielding a machete. You know, it is really a different set of circumstances if you look at it in that matter.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've got 8 more days till Halloween, Halloween.
No, I mean, granted, TCM came out in 74. And then what? The first Halloween came out in what, 78?
78.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, again, I get that Victor Miller totally ripped off the slasher idea from the first Halloween, but it's an entirely different production. Like, you know, we've often said on this on this show, we like part one and part five mainly because they're whodunits. Like the first Halloween movie, you know who's fucking doing it all. It's Michael, and you know that right off the bat. There's no question. That's where I think that the first Friday the 13th differs.
And
the plot twist.
It also differs in the score. One of our favorite characters of every Friday the 13th movie is Harry Manfredini's original score. Now, John Carpenter's 5/4 timing is a stripped down version of Tubular Bells.
Yeah.
Period. And that's the Exorcist theme song. And he was able to capture the essence, to quote Mr. Harry Manfredini himself. And that was shocking, but it's not a character.
I disagree with that. I mean, because while Carpenter's theme is stripped down and simplistic, it fucking works for what it does. Just like Manfredini's score worked for what it did. So I don't want to sit here and bash on Halloween's, you know, the sort of piano theme was in Halloween, but
the Bowling Green Philharmonic Orchestra.
But yeah, they both worked for what they did. So I don't even think that should even be on the table when you're comparing these two, because they both do the same thing. Especially when you talk about the ma. That's pretty much the same thing as John Carpenter's fucking din 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 din. You know, it's the same thing. I mean, those are both iconic fucking parts of the score for both the franchises. So, like, I wouldn't even put that on the table when we're talking about this, honestly.
It's almost like, you know, if somebody is mean to your kid and then you automatically put aggression towards that person. I love Halloween. I there's so much I love about the original two, and it just, for John Carpenter to go off and compare Friday the 13th to hand stimulation versus intercourse.
Yeah, hang on. Let me just read what he said about that. And I'm taking this from iHorror.com, a John Squires article called "John Carpenter's Not a Fan of Friday the 13th. This is not a direct quote, but basically Squires wrote that Carpenter also noted that chainsaw is like sex, while Friday is more akin to a hand job. And like he says, like, who the fuck doesn't like a hand job?
Take what we can get, sir.
So, yeah, I mean, I can understand his disdain for Friday the 13th, especially when you have Victor Miller publicly saying I ripped off Halloween. But I think in this particular podcast, he should have attacked that more directly instead of trying to sort of, oh, fucking Texas Chainsaw Massacre was the greatest fucking thing ever and fuck Friday.
I agree with that wholeheartedly. I mean, I just, like I said, I love Halloween. I love it. I mean, but I don't love it as much as Friday the 13th. I can't help it. Even the movie that we're about to discuss, it may not be a fan favorite, but fucking hell, this is a part of us. And I'm going to always stand up for it no matter what against anybody.
Yeah, it's like, hey, man, This is my fucking little brother here. Like, I can talk shit to him and beat the fuck out of him, but damn it, if you try to do it, I'm gonna fuck you up, sir.
Word.
And another thing I think that you have to think about too is, and no disrespect to John Carpenter by any means, but I'm just thinking objectively, if I had made a film and I felt that another, you know, film was ripping off my idea in any way, shape, or form, I'd probably make some jabs at it too, especially considering that film has been more successful than mine. Obviously, Friday the 13th franchise is, you know, a higher grossing film franchise in all aspects, between the collectibles and all the films and everything involved, than compared to Halloween. So, you know, who's to say that maybe there's not a little jealousy in there somewhere? I don't know.
I mean, there might be, but like I said, like if that was the case, I wish he would have just attacked that more directly instead of beating around the fucking bush, sort of bringing in Texas Chainsaw and shit. I mean, because if we're going to go back and talk about, you know, which of these films started the sort of 80s slasher genre, it would have to be fucking TCM. There's no question about that, in my mind anyway. I mean, if I'm wrong, let me know. But so he's just fucking basically beating around the bush when he could have said, you know what, fuck Victor Miller for ripping me off and creating a franchise that did better than mine. He wants to fucking bring it back to Chainsaw and shit. So that's the main problem I have with his comments. He doesn't, if he is in fact jealous, he does not attack the focus of his jealousy directly.
Yeah, I mean, it could be a little bit of animosity there. I guess jealousy maybe isn't the correct word, because obviously John Carpenter has done very, very well. I mean, you know, one of the horror.
Oh yeah, not even in the Halloween franchises, but a franchise, but other, you know, other films that he's made as well. So yeah, you're right about that. I don't disagree with that at all.
I just think that, you know, anybody looking, you know, reading that or taking in the totality of the circumstances, you know, between everything, you know, involved, that maybe you would just look at it and think, you know, it kind of sounds like maybe there's a little animosity there, but I could be wrong.
No, you're right. Maybe jealousy was not the right word. I like your animosity word better. So I will use that from now on when I'm talking about this particular thing.
Yeah, I think that's probably more fitting. I definitely think that's a more fitting word.
But anyway, we are here tonight to discuss Jason X. That's a film that came out in 2001. So we are, you know, moving closer to modern times here. It was directed by James Isaac and written by Todd Farmer, which, side note here, I thought it was fucking cool that Todd actually played a part in the film. And you see, he, in my opinion, he has one of the best fucking deaths in the whole movie.
You got screwed on that
one. Yes. And it sucks so much that he's not here, because, you know, that's one of his favorite lines in this movie. He, by the way, is hanging out in parts unknown, defending America. So, you know what, maybe we should like get an address for him so people can send the guys some care packages and shit.
I love that idea.
If that's the thing that you would like us to do, email me, Chris@campbloodpodcast.com. If that's the thing that you're willing to do, let me know, because he is deployed right now overseas, with his unit. So yeah, let me know if that's the thing you want me to do. I can give you his address. But yeah, anyway, and it sucks because he actually was trying to be here tonight. This dude even packed his fucking microphone and laptop because he thought he was going to podcast in wherever he's at right now. We can't even know where he's at. So, I can't even tell you like where it's at. but yeah, so the first thing that I want to talk about is the mask. Which is why I thought it was nice that we had Nathan on tonight, because I'm sure that Nathan can talk a little bit about that. But like up until this film, like we can sort of explain how the mask changes over the films, yeah, for the most part.
Yeah, because
yes. not only that, but it, you know, it kind of looks like it kind of looks like a representation of a skull. So obviously this movie takes place in the future, and would you guys say on the timeline that it takes place before or after Jason goes to hell? Like, I'm not even totally certain where this would fall in the timeline. I mean, we know that Jason X was fucking put together as a way to, you know, sort of tide the fans over until they could get Freddy versus Jason together. But where does this fit in the timeline, do you think?
I think the beginning scene with Rowan and the Marines, when they go to try to find out Jason's inability to die and his unstoppable power, and then they cryogenically freeze him. I believe that's supposed to be taking place in part 8. Then when the colony from space finds Rowan and Jason, that's a couple centuries or more out.
Well, then you can't say that it takes place in part 8 because obviously...
No, not part 8, 2008.
Oh, okay. Well, again, though, does that take place before or after Jason goes to hell?
Hmm.
And this is the problem that I have with the new line, you know, movies. Like, you know, before this film, you could put these movies in a rough timeline, but... for whatever reason, they decided to go with this space idea, which, I mean, several years before, you know, we sent Leprechaun into space and shit. I think that was in 97, maybe.
I think that was the death of the franchise.
Well, they did. They did have Leprechaun Goes to the Hood after that, but and I wish that was a joke, but it's not. So I have a huge problem, like. And I know I'm getting off the mask topic right now, but I'll get back to the mask in a second. I have a huge problem, like, with this film because there's really nowhere you could put it. You can't put it after Jason goes to hell because Jason is in hell. And obviously, Jason in this film is not in hell.
But if he jumped bodies, so to speak, that is definitely possible. Anything's possible in Friday the 13th.
No, it's not, though.
So basically we're saying that Jason has the power to possess.
No, Jason Goes to Hell said that.
Yes, we are not saying that. Jason Goes to Hell did. But yeah, I have a huge problem with this film because you have nowhere to put it in the timeline. Like, this movie is pretty much a standalone. Now, granted, I will say that, you know, a lot of fans give this movie grief because it's so... it's in fucking space, but I don't mind that. I think this movie was fun, personally. But getting back to the mask, you know, it's so fucking different from what we're used to seeing. I mean, it has basically the right battle damage on it. Nathan, is there anything you can speak to the mask in this film? I mean, at all?
I mean, I really wish that I could, because as we all know that, you know, continuity really wasn't something that was prepared for or really looked into, you know, with the changes, you know, from each film and film, you know, film to film. And there's always a debate, you know, what about this, what about that? And I just have to view it objectively, just like all the other films. I mean, even like what you said, is it a standalone film? Yeah, I agree with you basically on that. But I still would look at the mask situation is a film to film thing as well.
We could probably, if Jason Goes to Hell never existed, which I think most of us could agree, that would be the better situation.
I mean, I would definitely say I wish it didn't exist. You're right. I'm not a huge fan of the film, but it is what it is. But you're right.
Yeah.
I can see the confusion. I can see the debate. You know, we could talk about it for hours on end.
We already did that.
You know what I mean in general. I mean, there's...
yeah.
Where do you fit it in? That's just a never-ending conversation.
Well, Jason Goes to Hell is not terribly bad to fit in, but this film is hard to sort of try to nail down when exactly it happened.
Right.
Because you have problems no matter where you put it in the timeline. If you put it after Jason Goes to Hell, well, how did Jason get out of hell? We don't get that explanation until Freddy versus Jason. If you put it before Jason Goes to Hell, well, you have to you have to sort of explain, you have to sort of take Jason Goes to Hell as happening on Earth 2, which yeah. I don't think you can really do that.
Well, I think it's just right in the sense that it needs to be treated as a standalone film. I don't think there's really any other explanation for it, at least a logical one. I think that's really about the only way you can look at it. I totally agree with you.
And speaking of logic, perfect segue, sort of. You know, me and Bobby were just watching this film like yesterday, and we were talking, you know, before we start recording about how Bobby has been watching, the original series of Star Trek, lately. And we, you know, he brought to my attention like some parallels here. So
yes, indeed.
I want to sort of get into that for a minute. So I'll let Bobby sort of give you the lowdown on the parallels to Star Trek.
Well, only a couple things that I noticed, mainly the colors of the clothing that everybody was wearing and to their specific jobs, like the robot KM14. And she was studying whatever the heck it was that she was studying. And she was wearing blue, much like the science officers would. A lot of people were walking around wearing red, especially in the ending of it. When the last Marine was that the red spacesuit he was wearing, you knew. So you could kind of say that he was gonna die because of the red. You knew he was gonna either sacrifice himself or whatever.
Yeah, for those that don't know, like that's a running joke in the original series. Like if you beam down to a planet
and you're wearing a red
and you're wearing a red shirt, you're probably gonna fucking die.
But a couple other things. Like anybody that was in a lead role at that moment, they would be wearing gold or something like that. And again, another reference to it. Anybody in command or leading, especially leading, they would be wearing gold. Of course, you got the why can't they just beam us off the ship? And you have that little reference.
Yeah. Rowan said that at one point, and they look at her like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
I think I did enjoy that though. I did enjoy seeing some of that.
I think the best, you know, some of the best evidence of a Star Trek connection would be with Adrian's character, which is an obvious reference to Adrian King. But she's the one that's performing she's attempting to perform an autopsy on Jason. Now, at one point, she fucking looks in, I guess it's a microscope or something similar. But if you notice, it has like a blue line, you know, on her eyes when she's doing it. And that's a callback to the fucking thing Spock always looks in.
The Spock box.
Yes, the Spock box. And the fact that she's wearing blue. Her shirt is blue, just like a science officer on the original series would be. So there are numerous Star Trek references in this film, even though we really couldn't, like, besides the beam me up, you know, can't you just beam us somewhere?
There's really no official reference to Star Trek. Even I was looking around online today, still couldn't. The only reference I found was the can't they just beam us off the ship?
Yeah. So I gotta think though, with as many like parallels as you see, I can't imagine that was unintentional.
Yeah, that seems like more than an accident. I wanted to bring up a point about, I know that we talked about Jason's outfit or Jason's look in this movie, and I happen to think that it's one of the better Jason looks that we have. I mean, I don't understand how he got the chain around his neck from part 7, and I mean, there's things that aren't explained, like hair growth, and I guess cryogenically freezing people, that's like hair club for men.
He's a hydrocephalic, and I don't think you should talk about him like that. And it sucks that Lando's not on, because that's Lando's joke. From the Burbs.
Well, but you also have to keep in mind too that a lot of the looks from film to film weren't necessarily correct anyway of what you would expect to see. So you know, you can imagine that there's going to be unexplained circumstances in that film. It's hard to, like Chris said, you know, where do you put it anyway?
So add that to the list.
The Uber mask was supposed to be a plot twist, yet they still put it on the. I didn't even notice that until I read about it. Like, wait a minute, you're right. Why?
Which it would have been a decent enough plot twist. And you know, a lot of people give this movie shit about Uber Jason, but I think within the context of the film, it fucking works. You know, it works well, I think.
How do you take an unstoppable force and make it more unstoppable-ier?
You fucking meld him with metal. That's how you do it.
Uber Jason. That's why.
Another thing about that, if they had that machine and it can bring people back from the dead, why didn't they just throw people that have been killed by Jason onto that machine and keep bringing them back?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they could have done that, I guess. But at the point where Jason got the fucking Uber makeover, you know, he basically broke the fucking machine anyway. So I don't know. That is an interesting thread to pull at, but you know, what the fuck, Todd?
And what else I don't quite understand, and maybe we can attribute it to previous cryogenics, the liquid nitrogen scene. Absolutely. But Jason's immune to liquid nitrogen?
No, he's not immune to it. He got freezed by it. Not liquid nitrogen, but whatever they used in the cryo chamber.
Well, yeah, I'm talking about when he dips the girl's head in the liquid nitrogen, pulls it out,
well,
busts it.
Well, if you look at that, though, he's just dipping her face in there. So he's got a hold of the back of her head. So his hand wouldn't have touched it.
I see.
And to be honest, that's one of my favorite death scenes in the whole fucking franchise.
I agree. Totally. Kane Hodder can
Did you see like in that scene, like Kane was grabbing a lot of fucking tit in that scene. Like yeah. He had a hold of them boobies. The whole time he was dragging her over to the sink.
Well, he is a hydrocephalic mongoloid pinhead cannibal rapey guy, edophile and necrophiliac and incestuous. I forget what I said before, but he's got some titles there that he's walked the border of sexual deviant. We'll leave it there.
Yes, that's true.
And another great death, like you pointed out earlier, Chris, was Dallas's death. I mean, that's brutal, man. Get
Oh, he's screwed.
He's screwed. I love the one-liners from this film, as campy as it is.
Oh, I have to say my favorite one-liner from that movie would be when Homegirl was about to get sucked through that little hole in the side of the ship. This sucks on so many levels.
Yeah.
Well, there was definitely some good kill shots in the movie. They did a great job with that, you know, between the head shattering and the sleeping bag kill. I mean, they're all the fans, you know, that I've talked to, you know, as far as the death scenes go, they all seem to say the same thing, is the kill shots are all great in that movie. And I would agree with that. They did a good job. All I'm just going to say, and I'm just going to leave it at this, is Jason doesn't belong in space, period.
Like, I would sort of agree with you there, but at the same time, like, this movie is fun. If you go into it not expecting the same, you know, sort of kids come near camp, kids die. If you don't come into it expecting that, I think this film works excellently. I mean, again, though, I think you have to look at it as a standalone film, but in my opinion, there are far worse movies in this franchise than Jason X, Manhattan and Manhattan and Goes to Hell, pretty much take the cake for me, even though I've warmed up to Jason Goes to Hell a little bit. I still would rank it pretty low.
Yeah. And you're right. I won't argue those. I mean, I obviously, starting with Manhattan, and you know, we can debate that all day too, but you know, the general consensus, if you want to call it that, with, you know, Friday the 13th fans being that the rapid decline from Manhattan forward. So if we just want to discuss, you know, just real quick and just leave it at that, saying, you know, Manhattan goes to hell, Jason X, you know, being kind of the downfall or whatnot. I mean, even watching it as a standalone film, I agree with what you're saying there, and you're right that you kind of have to view it objectively like that. But I just don't think Jason belongs in space. But then again, I'm not a sci-fi fan, so when I watch that film, it's just kind of like, you know, I'm not a sci-fi person anyway. Jason's in fucking space. What the fuck? Yeah.
And that's completely fair enough. I mean, Chris doesn't like the paranormal aspect of any of the films that touch on that, especially Jason Goes to Hell. But having an objective opinion, and I do believe that sending anything into space, just like Leprechaun, is a signal of the death of a franchise. They're reaching for straws. They're combining genres that don't need combined. Alien is the only one that's allowed to do that.
Yeah. Well, and one thing that I would like to bring up, and I'm sure you guys will know what I mean by this, is, you know, that movie came out July 24th of, you know, 2001. So obviously we're approaching, you know, 15 year anniversary. But first and foremost, in 2001, you know, we're, you know, right past that, you know, Y2K thing. And around the year 2000, you know, if you guys recall, there was a lot of the sci-fi stuff going on. So, you know, who's to say that it wasn't necessarily, I've never spoke with Todd Farmer or anybody that was connected to the film. I've never had a conversation with them about that, but who's to say that they weren't trying to play, you know, that sci-fi Y2K thing. Did you guys ever think about that?
Well, and that's probably the case. I mean, 2001, you had like The Ghost of Mars coming out and a couple others that were sci-fi horror type movies. I understand the disdain for it, but I don't think it's warranted personally. Granted, again, like it's hard to fit this film in any sort of coherent timeline in the franchise. But you know, those that have listened to the first episode of this show, you'll know that that's Allie's favorite, which is, you know, it's my daughter. So I watch this film quite regularly on Friday the 13th because that's the one she wants to watch. So maybe that has a little bit to do with why I won't like sort of bash it like other people will. But I just don't think this movie gets a fair shake. I mean, because, again, you have some of the best fucking kills in this film because of the sci-fi nature of it. You even got the scene where he's, you know, the sort of... And that's another thing. That's another parallel to Star Trek. They sort of have a holodeck. I mean, because when Azrael and Todd Farmer's character meet Jason for the first time, they're playing a fucking game on a holodeck type thing. And then like near the end of the film, they use that same sort of thing to trick Jason into thinking he's back at camp, which one of my all time favorite lines. Hey, you want to smoke some pot and have some premarital sex?
Hey, do you guys
Yeah, I mean, I fucking love that scene. The sleeping bag kill for the holodeck, we'll say, is excellent. I fucking love that shit.
Absolutely, I do. I mean, and it's a great love note to Kane's favorite kill. And I mean,
which, by the way, is going to be in the fucking new game for those of you who haven't heard that yet. The sleeping bag kill is going to be in the game.
Nice.
Well, all right, gentlemen. You know, we didn't have any listener mail this week. So let's just delve right into final thoughts. Jason X, take it or leave it. We'll start with you, Eric.
I mean, it's a film in my favorite franchise, and though it might not hold the quality of a final chapter, it still holds up. I mean, it doesn't have Greg Nicotero or Tom Savini doing the special effects, but there were some damn good practical effects there. I mean, the premise of him in space, if you take that aspect out of it, I mean, I love the way that he looks. He looks mean as fuck. And I just, even if it's not my favorite film in the series, watching it, if it's on, I'm gonna leave it there.
Nate,
you know, just because it is part of, you know, my favorite franchise, I'm gonna have to take it. I don't have to necessarily agree with, you know, with the aspect of it or some of the things that we've already discussed. I don't necessarily have to, you know, agree with those things, but, you know, just viewing it objectively, I'm gonna have to take it because it does give us another installment of Jason, whether you like it or not. It still gives us, you know, another film, you know, with our favorite character. So, you know, I may not agree with Jason in space and taking Jason out of, you know, his element per se, but I'll take it.
And Bobbo.
I enjoyed it. I got a good laugh out of it. I love all the references they make to Boris Karloff's The Mummy, Star Trek, just the little things you find in there, the satellite that says if you lived here, you'd be home by now. And then just all around, just the funniness, the comical value that it had. It was fantastic. I mean, even back to the great sleeping bag scene. Just, I mean, I pictured them being holograms and still not feeling any pain and just being those dumb ditzy girls getting beat in sleeping bags. I mean, just like, oh, premarital sex. I had a good time watching it. I would definitely watch it again. I'd say about a year from now to give it plenty of time in between. If nobody has ever watched it, yeah, definitely give it a watch. You'll laugh. That's where I go on it.
Yeah. I mean, I can see it both ways, so I don't fault anyone for their opinion on this movie. But you know, as always, please rate, review, and subscribe wherever the fuck you listen to this show at. If you want to support us financially, head over to campbloodpodcast.com/donate. If you have a question or a theory, you can hit us up at campbloodpodcast.com/feedback or comment on the show notes at campbloodpodcast.com/52. A special thanks goes out to the Downriver Rat for our intro and outro music. You can check his stuff out at thedownriverrat.com. Until next time.